financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite, Annex Comprehensive Wealth, Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Selective spending in a slowing economy, strong profits, fragile consumers. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. Great to have you here. I'm Jill Kraus, Chief Economic Strategist. Dr. Brian Jacobson is here. Hey, Brian.
Hey, it's great to be here.
And CEO of Annex, Dave Spano.
You know, MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, the agreement between U.S. and Iran, certainly has moved in the right direction, I believe. But the market, of course, has to digest that and everything that goes with it. And, of course, oil prices, opening up the straits, all of those things, and really removing one of those uncertainties. But the market has continued to go up despite this wall of worry that we have seen for a significant amount of time.
That's right. And most people who are familiar with some of the language that we use, the wall of worry, the idea that there's always something to worry about. And it seems like, you know, reality oftentimes comes in better than expectations or better than what's feared. And that's really, I think, the story of what we have seen over this past month, even the last 2 months with the market. I think we're more than 40, 45 days from the market bottom, and it has just ripped higher. And I think most of it is because the recognition that whatever is going on for now with oil prices is not a forever situation. Oil prices have moved lower. We've seen the stock market move up. Thankfully, it looks like inflation expectations might simmer down. I mean, this could be really almost transformative for not just sentiment, right? Consumer sentiment, but then also for monetary policy. What does the Fed do with high oil prices, gasoline prices above $4.50 a gallon? That's one of the reasons, perhaps the only reason, most Fed officials have kind of walked back the idea that we might cut later this year to, well, maybe we want to hike.
Well, the Poly Markets was suggesting that the next move was not down, but up. So we'll have to see. There's certainly the wall of worry won't go away. It hasn't gone away in my four decades of doing this. And, you know, maybe we open up the newspaper next week and Cuba is at the top of the storyline. And that's a very, very real possibility.
Yes.
And so does that continue to be a disruption? At the end of the day, you and I always talk about what is the profitability? Did the company that we're looking at, the franchise that we're looking at, did it sell more widgets? Did it make more income? Can we put a multiple on that? And where does it fit into a portfolio?
That's right. So focusing on the fundamentals, but then the question is what does the market place on those fundamentals in terms of the valuations? And sometimes things are richly priced. Sometimes they're really on sale. It is, again, goes back to the idea that it is not just one stock market. It is a market of stocks.
Right.
Lots of dispersion under there. I think year to date, one of the biggest leaders has really been with energy, as you would expect. Everybody was kind of leaving tech for dead a little bit earlier in the year, but that's come rip-roaring back. It highlights the importance, I think, about being patient, recognizing that you're going to have winners and you're also going to have losers. And it's about, has something fundamentally changed where you want to cut those losers? Because you don't want to hold on to them forever, necessarily, if you think it's dead money.
And your perspective generally is from a macro point of view, right?
Yep.
We do top-down and bottom-up, but a macro point of view shows that perhaps inflation is higher than we expected it to be, but it's still within this realm of understanding.
Yeah, it's not back to where it was 2021 to 2022, where it was like 9%.
Almost double digits.
I know. And so we do have elevated inflation, but some of the data we got earlier in the month, we had the consumer price index in this past week. We got the personal consumption expenditure deflator, which is a broader basket of goods and services. 3.8% year-over-year increase in that. So that's inflation. That's thankfully not 5%. It's not 9%. It's not comfortable to see 3.8. But one of the things that I kind of go back to is, all right, if most of the increase has been driven by these energy and food costs, what's going on with the core? Sort of what's the signal there? When we look at the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, the core is closer to about 2.5%, right? So maybe as we get through this situation with Iran, we see oil prices hopefully come down, gasoline prices move lower as well.
And especially during driving season.
Exactly.
So it will be a big thing to change the consumer sentiment. And you're going to see that, Brian, in a lot of individual names. And we've saw that now that earnings season has wrapped up. Everybody wanted to talk about all the AI stocks and watching Micron go through the roof. But it's really when you develop a portfolio, if the consumer is starting to feel better, you might see retail stocks, for example, in utilities. As you say, people are going to still pay their phone bills.
That's right. Well, this past week, it was really fascinating to see some of the people who are still reporting earnings. We had a lot of retail-oriented names out there. And there were some winners and there are some losers, of course, as there usually are. But the big message was that people are looking for value. So even though you do have budgets that are a little tight because you have to reallocate to keep filling up the gas tank, people are still forking out money for better experiences and better products. That was one of the things that we heard from a number of CEOs. I thought that it was really interesting how there were companies like Kohl's and Best Buy. You even had other companies out there like Bath and Body Works. They were talking about how consumers, they're feeling the pinch, but they're still shopping, they're still spending. It's just they're looking for more value for the price. So it's not as though they're just kind of pinching pennies. It's more that they're looking for the value for the price that they're paying.
And of course, when we build portfolios, and it's really a core thesis, is there is a core part of the portfolio that measures the person's tolerance for risk, their goals, all of this comes in. And then we have what you call tilts or tactical leanings to take advantage of that. In the last 30 seconds, how does that look?
Sure. So with the core, exactly, you have to be in it to win it is kind of the idea there. But in terms of those tilts, really taking advantage of what we think are some mispriced opportunities out there. So if we're thinking about like construction, or if we're thinking about biotech or medical devices or banks or robotics and automation, it seems like there are a lot of themes that we can have that really, they emerged, they revealed themselves in the market volatility.
And if these latest headlines bring more questions, Annex not only follows the market trends on a daily basis, but can help guide you through the numbers with an experienced team that is all in-house. Do you have a classic mishmash of accounts that you've been collecting over the years? Annex can help. Does not take long to click that Get Started button at AnnexWealth.com. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Custom-tailored investment and retirement planning from a fee-only fiduciary. Know the difference. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Selling assets in retirement might sound like an easy way to simplify life or maybe free up some cash, but could actually cost you more than you think. Some people might want to know why holding on to certain investments like homes or even old insurance policies might be the smarter long-term move. Tom Burkholz, Senior Financial Planner, Team Lead at Annex, is here. Hi, Tom.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
Tom, some clients nearing or entering retirement often ask whether to cash out high-value assets. What are some of the top assets retirees should be thinking twice about selling as they head into retirement, and why?
Right. Yeah. So retirement generally is a catalyst for a lot of life's most important financial decisions that you're ever going to make. So things like how to take your pension or your Social Security, how to set up your life insurance or health insurance in retirement, the list goes on and on. Many of these do require immediate action upon retirement. They can be time sensitive, things like that. But on the other hand, sometimes in retirement, you just need to stop and wait a moment and do some number crunching and really think about it and make an educated decision. I'll give you one example is life insurance. So for many retirees, they get to retirement and they think, hey, I don't have a mortgage anymore. My kids are moved out. I don't need this life insurance policy anymore. I'm just going to ditch it and surrender it. However, what they find sometimes is that there may be an unintended tax consequence. Or maybe they just sort of regret it and think, oh, I could have held this policy. There's all these different things you can do with life insurance policy in general. You can reduce the death benefit. You can change the dividend option. So generally, it's best to not kind of jump into something and really think it through.
If people did already jump into something and not think it through and sold some of their assets before they come and talk to somebody like you, is there a way to help them make it up in other areas?
Yeah, certainly there can be. Some of these things are irreversible, to your point. So once you do something, there may be no way to undo that in the future. But in general, there's certainly other types of things we can do to help out.
So for a wealth management firm like Annex, how does helping clients with these kinds of decisions, whether to sell or hold on to the assets, contribute to their overall retirement success?
Yeah, that's a great question. A really good financial advisor can add a lot of value, especially for someone who is at or near retirement. like I mentioned earlier, retirement is where some of the most important financial decisions you're ever going to make happen. And having an advisor that can really help you think through the decision, model it out in a planning software, and explain the tax consequences is so critical.
As far as the assets, what have you seen be converted to successfully?
Yeah, one example that I've seen is someone who has employer stock within their 401k. And some people may just think, oh, I'm going to roll this over into my IRA. But what this client did is they actually did something called net unrealized appreciation. They peeled out their employer stock. And because they were charitable, they just donated to charity. So they had multiple benefits at once. They lowered their pre-tax balance, lowered their future required minimum distribution, but also satisfied their charitable giving at the same time.
And what are some of the eye-opening things that you've introduced people to that they really weren't thinking about?
Yeah, that NUA is one of them. Certainly with life insurance, I think it's one of those things that there's so many different levers you can pull at an insurance company. And by the way, the insurance companies are never going to courtesy call you and say, hey, maybe you consider doing this with
your
policy.
Be a great courtesy.
Right? Yeah. So, and it's really impossible for any one person to know this. So that's why things like that, hiring an expert who has seen this hundreds of times before can really help. Because the other thing to consider is that when you retire, this is the first time you've ever retired and been faced with a lot of these decisions, where when you hire a financial advisor, ideally they've seen this hundreds of times, these scenarios before, and can help you make those decisions.
And people are feeling retirement. What about the years leading up to that? How soon should they get in touch with an advisor?
Right. There is a concept out there called the retirement red zone. So it's 5 years before retirement and 5 years after. So in this 10-year period, a lot of critical decisions are made that can alter the outlook of your entire retirement.
Because you get so excited about it's coming up in a year, mm-hmm. it's coming up in 6 months, and then they make that call, you can still kind of advise them on what to do at that point, right?
Yeah, certainly want to be proactive when it comes to retirement. I think you spend 90,000 hours over your career working and saving for retirement. So my logic is always, it's worthwhile to take an hour or two out of your day and come meet with a financial advisor.
Absolutely. You can meet with somebody like Tom Burkholz, Senior Financial Planner, Team Lead here at Annex. Thank you, Tom.
My pleasure.
Go to annexwealth.com, click that Get Started button.
Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
More in-person events this past week, so thank you if you've joined us. We always love to see you in person. Love to see your questions, too, with our live webinars. In-person events ready to go for June. Our Women in Wealth series continues with Saving the Family Cottage, Navigating Difficult Family Conversations When Vacation Property is Involved. And our Instant Insight series continues, Jobs and the Economic Outlook, breaking down what the latest jobs report might mean for you in about 15 or 20 minutes with Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson this coming Friday, June 5th at 9 a.m. Click events at the top of the page at annexwealth.com that will reserve your spot or set up your reminder. Director of Financial Planning, Eric Strom, is here. Hey, Eric.
Hello, Joe.
And Chief Economic Strategist, Dr. Brian Jacobson.
Yes, hello. And Eric, thank you so much for being here because, you know, we have a commitment here at Annex to provide empowering education to the public and to our clients, but also to ourselves. And that's done often through continuing education and a variety of internal seminars that we do. And this past week, we had one that your team put on that was outstanding. And we covered a number of topics that I thought might be really interesting for a more general audience. The first topic is about the Trump accounts. There's been this buildup of anticipation for what these are. Any updates from this past week? I heard that there's now an app available for it.
Yeah, I've heard that too. And you can think of these as a 401k for kids, right? Or maybe think of it as a starter retirement account for kids or a starter investment account. So this is known very well for its free money component. So if children are born in 2025 through 2028, then as long as they enroll on the website, trumpaccounts.gov, or through your tax filing, then you can get $1,000 of free money. And who doesn't want that?
No kidding. Wow. And plus, Michael Dell, his company was in the news this past week, had outstanding earnings. He made some massive contribution to help fund some accounts as well that is apparently going to be coming out.
Yeah, that's right. So that's another way that money can get into those accounts. They're called qualified general contributions. But another way that money money can go into these accounts, our employers will be able to put in up to $2,500 per year per employee. So not per child. So if I've got multiple kids like I do, then it's not like they can do $2,500 for each of my daughters. But there's another thing, is that you can just put money into these accounts yourself. Up to $5,000 a year can be added per child to these accounts.
So if you decide that you're going to set this up for your daughters, right, and you put in $2,500 and there's a $5,000 cap, would the employer contribution count towards the $5,000, or would that be like on top of
it? No, the employer contribution counts towards that cap. But what's interesting is some politicians are predicting that this could become a widespread benefit that, you know, companies are offering. So to be competitive, wow, our company better offer it too, because everybody's doing it, right?
Yeah.
And if that were to happen, that certainly would very much help these accounts take off.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, who doesn't want to really take full advantage of those employer matches or those employer benefits? So that I wonder if there's going to be some sort of tax incentive for employers to offer it.
Yeah, they'll be able to deduct the contributions, that we know. And really stepping back, the way these accounts work is the money is invested within there and it gets to grow. No distributions until the child is 18, or until the year that they are turning 18, I should say. And really, these are just designed to help young children participate in the economy.
Wonderful.
More from Eric and Brian coming up. Financial planning at every level. Annex Comprehensive Wealth, Annex Private Client, and Annex Ignite. 9 total locations. There's one near you. Another quick reminder, our Women in Wealth series continues with Saving the Family Cottage. Hey, it's up north season. Keep the peace. Avoid family conflict with smart planning when multiple heirs share a vacation home, creating a smooth, lasting transition that fits seamlessly into your overall financial plan. This is always a popular one. June 18th. 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at our Annex Wealth Management headquarters in Brookfield. Click the events page, reserve your spot at annexwealth.com. Glad you're here with us this morning. Time for news. Let's go to the WTMJ Breaking News Center.
Planning and investing insight from a fee-only fiduciary. You're listening to Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back. Our new Women in Wealth page is up at annexwealth.com, including the new Women in Wealth podcast, on demand with special guests and strategies to empower women and gain greater confidence. This week for the Women at the Helm segment is Raquel Filmanowitz, a woman who has been in corporate banking, helped organize a political convention, and now runs a venture capital firm. So make sure you check that episode out. Director of Financial Planning, Eric Strom on the show, and Chief Economic Strategist, Dr. Brian Jacobson.
Yes, welcome back. And Eric, I wanted to continue our conversation about the continuing education that we had here at the firm with the second topic, which is about, it seems like a made up word, because maybe it is, Rothification and required Rothification. Can you explain what that is all about?
This goes back to the Secure Act 2.0, which was passed in December of 2022. Seems like a long time ago, but this was actually quite complicated to roll out, so it got delayed several times. And finally, this year, it is completely in effect. This is affecting higher income earners, and this applies to people making what are called catch-up contributions. So not catch-up like the drive-thru at Culver's, but catch-up contributions for those who are 50 and older, right? So they can put extra money into retirement plans. However, if you made more than $150,000 at your job from the same employer in the prior year, guess what? They're forcing you to put that into the Roth side of your retirement plan. That is the required Rothification.
Ah.
And pretty big deal, because you lose that upfront deduction.
Sure. And that's probably the budgetary reason why they did that, right? Because otherwise, prior to that, if you wanted to make those catch-up contributions, you could do it on a tax-deferred basis into a traditional 401k. So you get the nice tax deduction at the beginning. But now, so the idea is you pay the taxes on that catch-up contribution and it goes in, but then don't they lose money when you start taking it out and it's tax deferred, or there's no more taxes when you remove it?
Of course. And we know how Congress loves kicking the can down the road at times. And really, in Washington, the tax writers and the politicians, they love expanding Roth because it brings more money in today. And when they do those 10-year budget forecasts,
yeah,
when they're looking at reconciliation bills and all of that, any kind of Roth expansion looks favorable for that. But if you think about it in the long term, right, we are letting people grow their money tax-free, which is excellent for the individual American, which is who we represent and who we help. Yep. But it might be a little tough for the country, right?
That's right. So in terms of how it used to be and how it is now, were people still able to make those catch-up contributions if they were, 50 or older? It's just now when they do it, and if their income is above that certain level, it has to be in the Roth form as opposed to the traditional form?
That's exactly it. But also, this affects people in their 60s, because if you're between age 60 and 63, there's actually a new catch-up, an extra catch-up. Now, for some reason, if you're 64 or 65, sorry, no luck. Huh. But if you're 60 through 63, then you can put an extra few thousand dollars on top of the normal catch-up amount into your plans. But again, that is going to be Roth if you're a high-income earner.
Well, that's fascinating. So 50 and older, you get a catch-up contribution. 60 to 63, it's like you get super catch-up. But then 64 and older, it goes away?
Yes, and if the plan has no Roth option, guess what? Higher income earners can't make any catch-up contribution at all, which reminds me of just last week, I was taking my daughters through the Culver's drive-thru. They didn't give us any ketchup in the bag. No ketchup. So if you've got no Roth option, no ketchup.
Eric said Culver's twice. I didn't hear anything else you guys said. Uncertainty with geopolitical situations, inflation or taxes, or you see or hear about something you'd like to pursue, we are here at Annex. Having someone ready to answer your questions can make all the difference. Click the Get Started button at annexwealth.com. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Money Talk is straight talk from a local fee-only fiduciary. It's time to know the difference. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. Now on the show, we're having all kinds of guests today. Director of Retirement Plan Services, Tom Parks, is here. Hey, Tom.
Hello.
And Chief Economic Strategist, Dr. Brian Jacobson.
Yes, hello. Welcome back. And Tom, I wanted to follow up on a conversation that Eric and I just had about required Rothification. So that is where if you are a higher income individual, and you can make these catch-up contributions to a 401k plan where you're like 50 or older, it needs to go into a Roth, which sounds great. But then the question is whether or not your employer offers the Roth option.
That's correct. So they would have to offer it in order for the catch-up contribution to be eligible in the first place. That is correct.
So that raises the question in my mind about why might an employer want or not want to offer a Roth?
Well, I can't think of a reason, Brian, why they would not want to offer a Roth without regard to this Rothification thing.
Really?
So, but especially in light of the Rothification. So the question really is, you know, what would get in the way of you doing that, aside from amending your plan if you don't already have it? Mm. Most employers that we come across do offer Roth deferrals because, again, there's really no reason not to. And they're a great option for younger people. They're a great option for a lot of people. So back in the day when Roth became available in 401k plans, it initially had a sunset provision. And so some employers were like, I don't know if I want to add that, and end up taking it away later. Mm. Well, the sunset provision went away very quickly. And sometimes there was a technological reason, like, oh, you know, getting it into the payroll system. Uh-huh. None of that stuff applies anymore. I mean, it's so easy to do, and all of the providers make it available to you. So, yeah, why someone would not do that, I honestly can't think of a good reason. So
probably just inertia, like maybe they don't know it, or
totally
just they haven't done the paperwork.
That's right. If no one asks, it's one of those things.
Sure.
And that's why when I tell people, you know, if we're not managing the 401k, I'll be talking to a friend or whatever, I'll say, you know, whether it's the Roth or something else, go ask your HR department, go ask the people in charge of your 401k plan, because you never know. If you ask, they might be like, oh, sure, that sounds like a good idea. So I think inertia is the big reason.
How long does it take to actually get that implemented? Like, what would the process be in if you are one of these rare employers who you have a 401k plan that you're offering, but it doesn't have this Roth feature? What's that process look like and how long does it take?
So it does depend on a couple of factors. It depends on your provider. So, you know, how quickly they can accommodate the request for a change. The way 401k plans are structured, sometimes you have a full service provider. So Fidelity is a good example. Usually if your plan is with Fidelity, they do the record keeping, they do the custody, you know, they do pretty much all the administration stuff. And so it's, you know, you go, it's a one-stop shop and it's mm-hmm. easy. Other times there's a third party administrator and then they have to coordinate with the record keeper. So there's a little bit that goes on there. The other thing that might get in the way, depending on your plan design, if you have a safe harbor plan, there are some rules about the frequency with which you can make fundamental changes to the plan design. Sometimes it's once a year. In the case of Roth, I don't think that that's something that would get in the way. I will say that at the end of last year, there was a big push among the service providers to say, hey, this thing's coming up. Mm. And so you want to be prepared for it. But people get so many emails, you know, a lot of people didn't pay attention to that. In the case of our clients, they all had Roth anyway, so it didn't matter. But it's something you got to pay attention to. If you decide to do it, it shouldn't be a huge deal. Usually there's a 30-day notification requirement if you're going to make a change to the plan, but it shouldn't be that big of a deal.
Now, in what situations would like an employer be going it alone where they'd have to be the ones noticing they got the email from, you know, the record keeper or whatever, as opposed to they're bringing in an outside party like you and Annex in order to kind of, you know, keep abreast of everything that's going on and keep them informed?
Yeah, some of the less technically advanced or less service-oriented providers, I would say. The bare bones, there are more and more of these online operators coming into the space. The thing with those plans is they're much more vanilla. So a lot of times they have, you don't have a whole lot of choice in like creative plan design. So sometimes the thing is there and you don't even realize it because it's part of the package and you don't get a lot of communication. So it just varies from one provider to the next.
It seems like if you're running a business that is a lot more to have on your plate. And so it probably pays to have a specialist come in and help you with that.
Indeed it does.
He's the Director of Retirement Plan Services. Tom Parks, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson stays with us for the hour. Click that Get Started button at annexwealth.com. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hey, glad you found us. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. This show, of course, also a podcast on demand. As soon as the show is over, right at the top of the hour, you can download it. And a lot of people have been doing that. So thank you if you've downloaded the podcast version. The Axiom, that is our newsletter with our Week in Review video in your email on Sunday morning, along with what we're watching for the week ahead. Just search Annex Axiom. Other podcasts, too, like the Wealth Ideas, Strategies, and Decisions of the Wealthy in America, and the SWOT podcast, Strengths, Weaknesses, Opportunities, and Threats of the Current Market, with a new episode with that first thing Monday morning, and the new Women in Wealth podcast featuring special guests helping to empower women through genuine conversations. Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson is here, and CEO of Annex, Dave Spano.
Thank you, Joe. Yeah, this portion of the show will be brought to you by the letter E. We have talked a lot about shapes of the economy and what we've talked about most of the year, what was called a K-shaped economy, right? So you letter K, you've got two parts. There was a bifurcation in the economy, right?
Yep.
But now think about it in a three-speed economy, then the letter E, right? And that is really what's really starting to take hold, is that there's probably three portions. It's not just the upper income and lower income, but there's probably a middle income that is beginning to recognize that inflation is an issue.
It's so true. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, the idea, the visualization of the letter K, it makes for a great headline, but I think it did overlook that nuance about how not everybody's the same, right? You can't just neatly categorize people into high income and low income. Well, what about everybody in between,
right?
And what we're seeing with a lot of the data is that on the lower end of the income distribution, we know that the wage wage growth. It's about, according to the Atlanta Fed, their wage growth tracker is that it's about 3.6% year over year, which is slightly lower than overall inflation. The problem is lower income individuals tend to buy more of their budget or spend more of their budget on like gasoline and food. And so maybe their realized inflation is higher than what people at the upper end are experiencing. And so their real income seems to be maybe contracting more so than at the upper income. But what about everybody else in the middle, right? And that's really the locomotive of the economy, consumer spending. It's true not just in the economy, it's also true in politics, right? I mean, they're always talking about how who is going to capture what's called that median voter, that middle voter, to tilt it.
Which is populism, and it's not just here in the United States, but the UK, and that's the reason it's taken hold.
It is, exactly. And so what we're seeing in terms of the economic outcomes is middle-income individuals, like consumer confidence, consumer sentiment, and even income gains, they're chugging away. They're not feeling great.
Consumer confidence, though, I read that University of Michigan consumer sentiment, and it is at an all-time low. And you look at that and go, how can that be? Because U.S. real consumer spending continues to skyrocket.
Yeah.
So they're spending even though they're just a little bummed out.
Maybe it's retail therapy.
Right? Yeah, there you go. I
think it does highlight how some of the sentiment surveys and confidence surveys can be a little misleading about how people are actually going to behave. How you feel isn't going to affect whether or not you're going to pay your phone bill or your internet bill or your Netflix subscription. People are still going to do a lot of the spending. A lot of the anxiety seems to be growing in terms of job security. And so that's what I've sort of seen in the data, is that the sentiment and confidence numbers are a misleading guide to how people will actually behave. But we do want to pay attention to how secure do people feel in their jobs. And that's where we have seen it increase that anxiety, but it hasn't gotten to a point where my recession flags are flying.
And you think part of that is because everyone says that the AI, you know, that robots are going to ruin the world and AI is going to take your job. And so they're concerned, and maybe that's part of it.
Yep.
Or it could be, and I've heard this as an explanation, it's just all of the negative news feed, the 24-hour cycle makes people feel poorly, despite of the fact that they're really doing okay.
Well, very true. You do tend to get this bandwagon effect in the media, where if there's one headline that pops up on, say, like, you know, Reuters or Associated Press, suddenly you see it shortly thereafter on like Axios or Wall Street Journal or CNBC. And there's always a little thing, as reported by whoever the original source was.
Feedback loop.
You get that feedback loop. Yeah. Exactly. And in fact, we have a lot of access to alternative data sources where you can actually measure sentiment. The Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis, they have their own. It's a publicly available site where you can look at the new sentiment. They update it on a daily basis, but there's some other proprietary ones. And all of them have been showing that basically ever since, let's say around January 2025, the news flow, the sentiment has just been almost amplified, going negative instead of positive. You do get periods where it starts to go positive again, but it does seem like the vibes maybe are being fed by the headlines.
The bad vibes. So in the last minute or so, Brian, people hear all this negative news and read all these things, yet the market continues to set all-time highs. The takeaway would be to design a portfolio in a financial plan that has resilience.
Yeah, and that's really the purpose of diversification, is it doesn't work every time, but it's supposed to work over time, whether vibes are good, vibes are bad, whether you have increasing interest rates, decreasing rates, whether inflation is high, inflation is low, because these things do change, right? Whatever we're going through right now, it's like the weather. Just give it a couple hours and it's probably going to change. What we've seen, I think, over the last month especially, is that the most focus of the market has been on the fundamentals, about the earnings of businesses. So despite the negative headlines about consumer confidence and consumer sentiment, really, it's about, well, what does it mean for the bottom line of a lot of the companies that we invest in?
More in-person events ready to go for June. Women in Wealth Series, Saving the Family Cottage, Navigating Difficult Family Conversation When Vacation Property is Involved. Also, the Instant Insight Jobs and the Economic Outlook, the webinar coming this Friday, June 5th, 9 a.m. Central, 10 a.m. Eastern, breaking down what the latest jobs report means for you in about 15 or 20 minutes. Click the events page at annexwealth.com. There it is, another episode of Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. The podcast is ready right now on the radio station website, or you can just search Annex Money Talk. For Dave Spano and Dr. Brian Jacobson, I'm Joe Kraus. Have a great week. Join us again next Saturday at 10 a.m. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.